it is.
From deep inside your radio.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, you know, this broadcast originates from time to time in three different cities, predominantly London, New Orleans, and the home of the homeless, Santa Monica. They're all hot. There's, you know, really no place to chill except here in the virtual Le Show Dome today. Program is pre-recorded for your listening pleasure. And you know that I spent the last... You may know. Why would I assume what you know? How would I know what you know? What am I in, show business? I was in London the last couple of weeks. Left right after the Olympic closing ceremony. Yes, even I was embarrassed. But it's been an amazing thing to watch a usually cranky country get all giddy, get all almost American about flag waving, about optimism, about ambition and drive, about compulsory team sports in schools, you know, all the good stuff. You know, it'll pass, but I must say, however, in all sincerity, and you know how much that hurts, that I've never seen people in London or any other, well, I haven't been in a lot of provincial parts of England, but around London, being so friendly as the 20,000, I think that was the number, volunteers who staffed the Olympics so that, you know, Coke could make a lot of money. They were, apparently that fact was hidden from them, so they were cheerful and friendly and happy. And I don't know what exactly was fed to them, was put in their food, but I would like some of it, personally. And this, you know probably better than I do about the degree of dissatisfaction in this country with NBC's. How could anybody be unhappy with NBC, with NBC's coverage of the Olympics? And it focused mainly on it being on tape delay. Much like the situation in New Orleans, where the daily newspaper is profitable, has the most penetration, pardon me, that is to say readership, among the population of any major American city, and yet the owners are retreating to three-day-a-week publication from daily to suit the advertisers, you see. And similarly, NBC's, you know, they're not the bad guys. They tape delayed, well, they are the bad guys, but they did tape delay the Olympics coverage to have it in prime time because that's when the advertisers want all the eyeballs, you see. So if you ever get into a discussion about the superiority of advertising-supported media, now you know. And apropos, this was the song that NBC chose to cut out of the Olympic closing ceremony because apparently, yeah, didn't attract enough women. Hello, welcome to the show.
Sunset time.
Terry
You know, Embassy was right. I'd rather see Bob Costas interview Bob Costas. From the edge of America, from the home of the homeless, ladies and gentlemen, I'm Harry Shearer, welcoming you to this edition of the show. News of the godly, first of all, because it is the weekend. A secret police bugging operation caught a senior Australian Catholic figure on tape saying that it was not up to him to report a pedophile priest. He also encouraged a victim not to go to the authorities for fear of bad publicity. Abuse victim Peter Murphy told the Herald newspaper in Australia that police wired him up, ouch, to record a meeting between the church leader and victims as part of an investigation into the pedophile priest Father Peter Chalk in Melbourne, not Melbourne. Murphy, who was abused by Chalk, said he met the head of Chalk's order, Father Brian Gallagher, and the victims to discuss what the church was doing about the allegations. The existence of the tapes, which have remained a secret since the 1990s, comes as the church faces allegations in New South Wales and Victoria, those are two states in Australia, of failing to assist in bringing pedophile priests to justice. Chalk was accused of abuse while working as a priest in Melbourne, not Melbourne, for the Missionaries of the Sacred Heart. Come on now. That's an international Catholic order that operates schools. Why would a guy who wants to... Oh. Murphy said that during the meeting, the missionary's then-head, Father Gallagher, told victims that Chalk had admitted to abusing up to 8 Victorian children during the 1970s and early 80s in Melbourne, not Melbourne. Despite Chalk's admissions, which Murphy reported to senior leaders in 1987, neither Father Gallagher nor anyone else reported the priest to police. Murphy has a clear recollection of the meeting, independent of the recording. He said he and two of Chalk's other victims asked Father Gallagher to report Chalk to police, but he said he and the other victims recalled Father Gallagher telling them to, quote, try and work out some other way of resolving it without having to go to courts and all the publicity and exposure. I asked Father Gallagher if Chalk had admitted doing what he did, said Murphy. Gallagher said he had. In a written response to the allegations, Father Gallagher said he did all he could to support Murphy and the other victims. Asked last week about the recollections of Murphy and other victims of him expressing a wish for police not to be involved, Gallagher admitted, quote, I would say that sentence quite differently now, unquote. That's neither Gallagher nor Gallagher Jr., if you're keeping track of American comedians who molest fruit. Police did not pursue Chalk, who moved to Japan in 1981. His details were given to Australian immigration officials so he could be detained if he tried to return to Australia. He left the order in 1995, changed his name, and became a teacher, which he probably couldn't have done if there had been any record with the authorities about, you know. News, ladies and gentlemen, from AFPAC. Children as young as 10 toil in illegal mines, often for 12 hours a day. Afghan officials say the problem is stubborn despite recent efforts. This is in Afghanistan. The boys represent a thorny obstacle to the nation's push to transform its mining industry into a modern economic engine, according to the Wall Street Journal. At unlicensed coal mines in Afghanistan's Bamiyan province, that was the one where the Taliban blew up the Buddhas, you may remember, children as young as 10 are working with no safety protection. Fledgling African filmmaker Fardeen Barkazai risked a trip through Taliban territory to tell their story. Child labor is a major, major problem in Afghanistan, says Hervé Berger, head of the UN International Labor Organization in Afghanistan. In Kabul, children play and go to school, but that's not true outside the capital city. The specific assertions of people interviewed in Barkazai's video couldn't be independently verified by the journal, but the driver and teacher who accompanied him on his journey confirmed details of his story, as well as the location of the unlicensed mine. Hearts and minds, ladies and gentlemen. Not bodies, but, you know, hearts and minds. And a former senior official of the United States CIA has argued that Al-Qaeda is no longer the most powerful group in the global Islamist insurgency. Bruce Riddell, who served in the CIA for nearly 30 years prior to his retirement in 2006, warns in the Daily Beast that Lashkar-e-Taiba is now, quote, the most dangerous terror group in the world. That sounds like a reality show premise just waiting to happen, doesn't it? Come on, jihadists now. Let's vote for one of you has got to vote. In the editorial, the former CIA analyst, who is now a professor at John Hopkins School of Advanced International Studies, said that Lashkar-e-Taiba operates freely inside Pakistan, but they're our friend, and continues to have strong operational connections with the Pakistani armed forces and the country's intelligence establishment. Since its founding in 1990, the group's traditional political aspiration has been to end Indian rule over Kashmir and then integrate it with Pakistan, but the group's aims appeared to expand significantly in 2008 when it sent 10 heavily armed operatives to Mumbai on speedboats. You know what happened there. So, we're thinking about the old enemy, not the new one. That's never happened before. And now,
he's not a general.
He commands no troops.
He's not an inspector.
He peeks at no stoops.
He's an
inspector general.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
News of the inspectors general, ladies and gentlemen. Thanks to our friends at McClatchy for this. A senior officer with the nation's spy satellite agency, the National Reconnaissance Office, is being investigated over criminal allegations related to contracting, even as the agency's number two official is accused of trying to shield his subordinate from scrutiny. That's McClatchy's version of events. The Inspector General of the National Reconnaissance Office opened the criminal inquiry after meeting secretly in May with four top officers of the agency who told her the Inspector General is a her. Congratulations. About a series of allegations of malfeasant actions by a colleague, according to the documents obtained by McClatchy. The agency's Deputy Director, Air Force Major General Susan Mashiko, then heard about the investigation and made what the Inspector General described as an illegal threat of retaliation against the whistleblowers. Quote, four directors went to the IG, the Inspector General quoted Mashiko as saying to a senior officer, I would like to find them and fire them. Unquote. When the officer reacted with surprise, Mashiko backed off, saying she would have preferred if the directors had come to her first, the Inspector General said. However, the Inspector General, Lanny D'Alessandro, wrote she'd learned of a history of intimidation by Mashiko and the senior official who's being investigated. The whistleblowers told the Inspector General they tried previously to raise the concerns with Mashiko and the then principal deputy director of the agency, but that none of the accusations had been addressed to the best of our knowledge. The drama is unfolding as Congress debates whether to toughen anti-leak laws to crack down on classified information being provided to the news media, except by members of the Obama administration. That administration has responded by ordering that thousands of U.S. intelligence and law enforcement employees be questioned about media leaks when they're polygraphed during security clearance screening. In an unprecedented move, the administration has also criminally prosecuted numerous government employees for leaking, says McClatchy. Whistleblower and media advocates fear that the aggressive efforts will have a chilling effect on the reporting of government wrongdoing, but won't stop classified information from being leaked when it's politically advantageous to, oh, let's say, administrations. After McClatchy published stories raising questions about the NRO's polygraph program in July based on whistleblower reports, top officials of the agency told polygraphers in a meeting that the accusations McClatchy detailed were unfounded and based on incidents that were taken out of context. One official vowed to take action against polygraphers named and unnamed who'd cooperated with the reporter, said a source who asked not to be named. Good times at the National Reconnaissance Office, ladies and gentlemen. News of the Inspectors General, copyrighted feature of this broadcast. And now a note about language. Yes, I'm going to get cranky now. Get cranky now! But deservedly so, because, you know, it's the only language, it's the only English language we've got, ladies and gentlemen. And it's getting weirder, not just in this country, but also in England, where they like to think of themselves as a bit more careful about all this stuff. But no, it's happening there, too. Perfectly good nouns are being replaced by verbs which are shorter and therefore, I don't know, fit better in Twitter, look better on whiteboards, sound more punchy, I think is what it is. You hear people in corporate and other organizational life now saying, that's a big ask. Now that is the nouning of, see how good it sounded there? The nouning of a verb. That's a big ask. That's so much more difficult than saying request or demand or whatever it might be. That's a big ask. And it's calling for a big spend. You hear that? I hear that in Britain a lot. I don't know if that's come over here. A big spend. I know, expenditure is so hard to say when you got stuff in your mouth. I think, of course, the most widespread version of this is fail, which is rapidly replacing failure, because those pesky other three letters just get in the way. Yeah, I'm in a hurry. I got to describe a fail. I haven't got time to describe a failure. Get out of my way, URE. I'm just cranky about it. That's all. I'm not going to stop it. No, if I could, really, do you think? No. But just to put the little thing in your ear that the next time you hear any of those, just to go, ow. Ow, that's ugly. Would you do that for me, please? Thank you so very much. Uh-huh. And now, ladies and gentlemen, news of the warm, won't you?
Soft, listen to the warm. We can listen to the warm.
This is from James Hansen, who directs the NASA Goddard Institute for Space Studies, writing recently in the Washington Post. When I testified before the Senate, he says, in the hot summer of 1988, I painted a grim picture of the consequences of steadily increasing temperatures driven by mankind's use of fossil fuels. My projections have been proved true, but I failed to fully explore how quickly that average rise would drive an increase in extreme weather. In a new analysis of the past 6 decades of global temperatures, my colleagues and I have revealed a stunning increase in the frequency of extremely hot summers, with deeply troubling ramifications for not only our future, but also our present. This is not a model or a prediction, but actual observations of weather events and temperatures that have happened. The analysis shows it's no longer enough to say that global warming will increase the likelihood of extreme weather, and to repeat the caveat that no individual weather event can be directly linked to climate change. To the contrary, our analysis shows that for the extremely hot weather of the recent past, there is virtually no explanation other than climate change. The deadly European heat wave of 2003, the fiery Russian heat wave of 2010, and catastrophic droughts in Texas and Oklahoma last year can each be attributed, says Hansen, to climate change. And once the data are gathered, it's likely that the same will be true for the extremely hot summer the United States is suffering through right now. These weather events are caused by climate change. The odds that natural variability created these extremes are minuscule, vanishingly small. This is James Hansen from NASA, one of the leading scientists leading the campaign against climate change. He says our new peer-reviewed study published by the National Academy of Sciences, what do they know, makes clear that while average global temperature has been steadily rising due to warming climate, the extremes are actually becoming much more frequent and more intense worldwide. Enjoy. And the Greenland ice sheet melted at a faster rate this last month, July, than at any other time in recorded history, with virtually the entire ice sheet showing signs of thaw. The rapid melting over just 4 days was captured by three satellites, says The Guardian newspaper in London. It has stunned and alarmed scientists and deepened fears about the pace and future consequences of climate change. Scientists posting a statement on NASA's website admitted the satellite data was so striking, they thought at first there had to be a mistake. This was so extraordinary, at first I questioned the result. Was this real or due to a data error? Said Son Nghem of NASA's JPL. He consulted with several colleagues who confirmed his findings. Scientists were still coming to grips with the shocking images. I think it's fair to say this is unprecedented, said Jay Zwally, a glaciologist at the Goddard Space Flight Center, where Hansen works. The set of images show a rapid thaw between July 8th and 12th. Within that four-day period, measurements from three satellites showed a swift expansion of the area of melting ice from about 40% of the ice sheet surface to 97%. Scientists attributed that sudden melt. There you go. Melting. Would have been good there. They said melt. It's a big ask for me to continue this. Scientists attributed the sudden melting to a heat dome or burst of unusually warm air which hovered over Greenland during that period of time. It returned to more typical summer conditions by the 21st or 22nd of July. But one of the scientists involved in the study said the event, while exceptional, should be viewed alongside other compelling evidence of climate change, including on the ground in Greenland. Enjoy. News of the Warm, ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. This is Le Show from Santa Monica. That $47 million park I mentioned a few weeks ago, looking good. They got a big pile of dirt there now, and you know that doesn't come cheap. Ladies and gentlemen, you may be aware. I'm going to bet you are aware that the Obama campaign has been making hay for at least the last 2 months about the issue of, if it is an issue, about the issue of Mitt Romney's tax returns. He has released to the public a complete version of the 2000, oh, I'm going to get the years mixed up, the last available return, and a partial version of the latest return, which will be completed, they say, by the end of either this month or next month, making a total of 2 years of tax returns. And the Romney campaign says that's what John McCain did in 2008, and the Obama campaign then was satisfied with that. But the Obama campaign has this year been hammering Mitt Romney as to why he does not release, well, you know, like his dad did when he ran for president, 12 years of tax returns. His dad was George Romney. He ran American Motors. He made Ramblers. I know. That was my first new car, ladies and gentlemen, bought from George Romney. Anyway, this week, ending his really rule of silence on the issue, Mitt Romney responded to a question about his tax returns and dug himself a little hole.
I did go back and look at my taxes, and over the past 10 years, I never paid less than 13%. I think the most recent year is 13.6 or something like that. So I've paid taxes every single year, but every year I've paid at least 13%. And if you add in addition the amount that goes to charity, well, the number gets well above 20%.
Now, the Council on Budget and Policy Priorities, which, as the name suggests, is a full-fledged council, because I did a little research, ladies and gentlemen, preparing for this week's broadcast. I thought you'd appreciate that. They say that in the most recent year on record, which is either 2010 or 2011, the middle fifth of the income bracket paid a total overall federal tax rate, that's including payroll tax as well as income tax, of 14.6%. That's the middle. Mitt Romney's at the top. He paid about 13%. So we got the flat tax, apparently, already. Tell Steve Forbes to relax. Anyway, whoever's paying what, you know that nothing makes hay in American politics like complaining about taxes and complaining about the fact that other people aren't paying as much in taxes as you are. And it just struck me as noteworthy that Mitt Romney's rate was at lucky number 13.
It's a wonder that they're still asking. Might be because they're all multitasking. Reporters always run in packs. That may be why they're so obsessed with your taxes. You pay plenty, you pay lots, to help the widows and support the tots. So the news should be no big event. You're Mr. 13%. You're Mr. 13%. Now working folks may pay a little more, but that goes to help the esprit de corps. Bees gather around pistols and stamens. Funds tend to assemble in the Caymans. The lawyers say you're paying your fair share. There's no scintilla of a there. Why even ask where the green stuff went? You're Mr. 13%. You're Mr. 13%. Triskaidekaphobia is not a match for pluck. Your buildings all have 13th floors. Elevators never get stuck. 13 stars, 13 stripes, that's how our flag began. 13 days of Christmas is in your long-range plan. Now deductions are a major deal, of course. Gotta fuel the jets and feed the horse. Money goes to Bermuda 'cause it can, for the purpose of working on its tan. If the media and the charity, that's their job, then you're almost like any normal slob. The IRS hasn't made a dent in Mr. 13%. The GOP is a big enough tent for Mr. 13%. If he were not real, then we'd have to invent Mr. 13%. Mr. 13%. Mr. 13%.
Question method is the one to use. I'm saying that the 13 question method is the one you gotta use. You wanna have some fun, 'cause the 13 question method is the one to use. Question number one, you wanna have fun. Question number two, what to do. Let's see. Question number three, wanna go out and eat burger with me? God almighty, well, the 13th question method is the one to you. Now, question number five, don't give me no jive this morning. Question number six, and don't try no tricks this evening. Question number seven, I'll pick you up at a quarter to 11, baby. And question number eight, it's a date. Number 10, can we get in? Question number 11, gonna be just like a heaven, God Almighty. Question number 12, we get by ourselves. 'Cause the 13 question method is the one to you. The 13 question method is the one to you. Now, the 13 question method is the one you gotta use it if you wanna. 13th question method is the one to you. And she says, he says, method is the one to use.
have some fun, cause the...
And now, ladies and gentlemen, news of our friend the atom.
Clean, safe, too cheap to meet. Slave, cheap, too cheap to meet. Cheap, safe, too safe to meet. Slave, safe, too safe to meet.
Here with our friend Addie the atom. Addie, you enjoying the summer heat?
I'm always hot. That's why I can boil water.
Interesting. Okay, then. Ladies and gentlemen, the head of the California Public Utilities Commission has recommended that the agency delay for several months an investigation into soaring costs tied to the damaged San Onofre nuclear power plant. Soaring but cheap. At issue is who's going to pay the bill that's reached $165 million so far for repairs, inspections, and replacement electricity for a plant with crippled steam generators because of those vibrating tubes.
I'd pay, but I don't carry cash.
Atoms don't carry cash.
No. It's the rule.
Deadline Tomura, Fukushima, Japan. Central government operations to clean up evacuated areas badly contaminated by the disaster finally got underway in late July. However, much of the contaminated soil and other radioactive waste generated by the operation has nowhere to go. With no clear idea of where or when midterm storage sites will be built, and with many municipalities still lacking even temporary storage facilities. This is from the Mainichi Daily News. Meanwhile, it remains to be seen how effective the decontamination, which must be completed before residents can return home, you see, will actually be. We must remember to hurry, said a representative of the joint venture firm tasked with the decontamination operation in Tamura. 11 municipalities previously covered in whole or in part by the evacuation zones have been redesignated special decontamination areas, and congratulations to all of them. We're very proud of them to be cleaned up by the central government. Just cleaning and clearing away the grass in a cemetery on the first day of the cleanup dropped the airborne radiation in Tamura from 1.5 microsieverts per hour to 0.9. While significant, however, it's not enough to meet the goal. At first, national forests were considered for temporary waste sites, of course. They're free. They just belong to the public. The idea was scrapped, however, when it became clear the roads that would need to be built through the woods would be too costly in time and money. That damn waste again. You know, if we could just get rid of the waste.
I know. That's what I think.
Building a burial center for waste on the Romney Marsh in Kent, England, could devastate the local housing market. That's according to local estate agents. Funky or not, they've warned that. Fears have been raised that if the marsh were to host an $18 billion facility storing nuclear waste from across the UK, housing prices would crash and residents would struggle to sell their homes, even at auction, because fewer people would want to move there. Really?
See, that's silly. What's wrong with waste?
I don't know. Agents told a local newspaper, The Herald, that having Dungeness A and B power stations in the area does little damage to property values, doesn't significantly put off prospective buyers, but they said a potential nuclear waste dump with a surface area the same size as the Channel Tunnel site could have a much bigger impact.
Especially when those homes are taken to auction.
You have no comment on that.
No, you do bad accents all the time.
Radioactive contamination at Treasure Island Naval Station, where San Francisco plans to build a high-rise community for 20,000 residents, is more widespread than previously disclosed, according to a U.S. Navy report obtained by the San Francisco Bay Citizen. Although the Navy and one state agency say cleanup has been effective and remaining radiation levels are low, the State Department of Public Health expressed alarm as recently as May, saying earlier studies showing fewer radioactive sites had led to a botched cleanup effort and the potential spread of contaminants both on and off the island.
But it's called Treasure Island. What could be wrong?
Yeah, good point. The findings appear likely to complicate the environmental cleanup and new construction on Treasure Island after years of debate, much of it shielded from the public, probably with lead, over the island's radioactive hazards. Internal emails and documents obtained by the Bay Citizen leading up to the findings reveal numerous new areas of concern squarely in the path of the planned development. This draft report marks the first time the Navy has fully acknowledged that the island created from landfill in 1937.
Well, there you go. See? It's landfill to start with. And then it gets enhanced.
Was used as a repair and salvage operation for a Pacific fleet exposed to atomic blasts during the Cold War. That report came in response to state regulators who pressed for details after cleanup workers found radioactive waste in unexpected locations. It's like double jeopardy. Known potential sources of radiation on the island included a nuclear training ship intentionally doused in radiation and even glow-in-the-dark buttons handed out at the Golden Gate International Exposition held on the island. Treasure Island, however, was a ground zero in the 1940s for repairing, scrapping, recycling, and incinerating material from ships that might have absorbed radiation from atomic bomb tests in the Pacific. One shop repaired cannon sites containing radioactive glow-in-the-dark material, and the Navy has acknowledged the training ship sites might not be radiation-free after all. Since 1993, the Navy has been preparing the site for handing to the city, which was going to turn it over to developers, for high-rises, so you could look down on the radiation. A minor leak of cooling water that forced Palisades Nuclear Plant near South Haven, Michigan, to be removed from service last week is from a different part of the plant than the leak that forced the plant to be shut down for a month earlier this summer.
Well, that's good news, isn't it? Another leak?
Mark Savage, Palisades spokesman, said the leak that caused this particular shutdown was from the primary coolant system. Oh, well, that's okay then. No radioactive material was released into the environment, he said. 0.3 gallons of water was leaking per minute. The water would go through the reactor, circulate through the system, pick up heat, and carry heat for the steam-making process, said Savage. That's right. It's all about boiling water and to make steam. Deadline Waterford, Connecticut, as the Unit 2 nuclear reactor at the Millstone Power Station. Well, why would you call it that? You see, that's just asking for trouble. It's a millstone. No, it's a power station. It's a Millstone Power Station. As the reactor begins its sixth day of a shutdown due to record high temperatures in Long Island Sound, engineers at the plant are beginning to look at whether the plant could be operated safely with warmer water than is allowed by the current license. It's a long-term project to analyze whether we could go above 75 degrees, says a spokesman for Millstone. It may involve some changes in the equipment. The water is used to cool the plant, as you know. The plant would need approval from the Nuclear Regulatory Commission to change the license to allow it to use warmer water. This is the first time the plant has been shut due to water temperature since it began operating way back in 1975. When it was designed, Holt said a 75-degree maximum looked like a good temperature to pick. But since 1975, average temperatures in the estuary have been warming.
Don't look at me.
Federal regulators have issued a violation to the Tennessee Valley Authority after an inspection at its Browns Ferry Nuclear Power Plant in northern Alabama. The staff will increase oversight at the facility. The agency said the white finding for all three of the facility's units comes after NRC inspectors found that plant employees and operators were unable to adequately perform newly implemented procedures for a safe plant shutdown.
That never happened.
The NRC said it determined the workers were not adequately trained on the new procedures. The operators of the Calvert...
More?
Yes. The operators of the Calvert Cliffs nuclear power plant in Lusby, Maryland, shut down one of the plant's two nuclear reactors last week after a control rod accidentally dropped entirely into the core where fission occurs. That's according to the NRC. Control rods usually are gradually lowered or withdrawn from the core to regulate the reaction's pace. When an unplanned drop occurs, however, the fission process can become unbalanced and, quote, pose challenges, unquote, for the plant operator. It's according to the NRC spokesperson. Such a malfunction can be hell. Calvert Cliffs operators are still trying to determine why the control rod dropped entirely into the core. It sounds more ominous than it is, said the NRC spokesperson. I think it sounds, you know, plenty ominous. Control rod. That's supposed to control something, and it's out of control.
You're playing with words.
I am. A Japanese nuclear power company hesitated before using corrosive seawater to cool the number 2 reactor at Fuke because it hoped the reactor could be used again, according to video released by the company. This contradicts official findings that said there was no delay in using seawater to try to cool the plant. The U.S. Army Corps of Engineers says it will retain control of an old nuclear waste site about 30 miles northeast of Pittsburgh and hire a new contractor to continue removing hazardous materials there. The Corps halted the cleanup in May when crews discovered unanticipated amounts of complex materials like uranium and plutonium.
They're pretty complex.
They're very complex. That prompted a U.S. Democratic senator to have the NRC's inspector general investigate the site. The Army Corps, however, at the urging of local officials, says it will continue to control the site and will advertise for a new contractor. Let us try to clean it up. See, let us try as the Corps.
I get it.
A study has found that mutation rates were much higher among butterflies collected near Fuke. Exposure to radioactive material released into the environment has caused the mutations, according to a study. Scientists found an increase in leg, antennae, and wing shape mutations among butterflies collected following the 2011 accident. The link between the mutations and the radioactive material was shown by laboratory experiments, they report. The work has been published in the journal Scientific Reports.
That's junk science. That's junk science.
Why do you say that?
Because I don't believe it.
2 months after Fuke, a team of Japanese researchers collected 144 adult pale grass blue butterflies from 10 locations in Japan, including Fuke. When the accident occurred, the adult butterflies would have been overwintering as larvae. By comparing mutations found in the butterflies collected from the different sites, the team found that areas with greater amounts of radiation in the environment were home to butterflies with much smaller wings and irregularly developed eyes.
Butterflies don't need their eyes. They see with their wings.
Increased levels of a radioactive form of hydrogen found at 9 Mile nuclear station in Scriba, New York, pose no health risks to workers or the public, according to a company spokeswoman. Constellation Energy spokeswoman Jill Lyon said that elevated levels of our old friend tritium were found in a water sample from inside Unit 1 at the plant. Officials believe it entered Unit 1 in groundwater leaking into the building. The average concentration of tritium found in groundwater at nuclear plants is 20,000 picocuries per liter, according to the NEI, the Nuclear Energy Institute. The same figure is the Environmental Protection Agency's acceptable tritium level for drinking water. Isn't that a lovely coincidence? Meanwhile, the levels found at 9 Mile were 32,000 to 44,000 picocuries per liter of water, up to double the safe amount. But isn't that nutty? The EPA's safe level is...
What are you saying?
I'm saying it's a nutty world. And the chief of Belgium's nuclear regulatory agency says he's skeptical that the Doel 3 reactor near Antwerp can ever be restarted. He told public broadcaster RTBF that anomalies found in the tank holding the reactor's nuclear core could be cracks, in which case the plant would face instant, imminent decommissioning. Asked if he thought the reactor closed Thursday after an inspection could eventually be put back into service, he said, "I am quite skeptical at the moment."
You just read that because you like saying Antwerp.
You are correct, sir. That's a smart atom, ladies and gentlemen. Clean, cheap, safe, too clean, cheap, and safe to meter. Our friend, the Atom.
Popcorn, pop, pop. Well, now Mama's in the kitchen, fooling with the pots of chopping. Popcorn, pop, pop. Well, Papa's in the second room, waiting for Mama with the popcorn, pop, pop. Yeah, I'm in the back room, pop. about to blow my top for that
popcorn, pop, pop.
Oh, we before last we had some, last week we had some
popcorn, pop, pop.
Oh, not yesterday we had some, tomorrow we're gonna have some
popcorn, pop, pop.
I'd like to go out, but don't want to miss out on my
popcorn, pop, pop.
Doctor told me you barely off for that
popcorn, pop, pop.
Oh, I'd like to listen, but I can't lay off for that
popcorn, pop, pop.
You can have your taste, I'm gonna wait for my
popcorn, pop, pop.
Oh, pop your corn.
Popcorn, pop, pop.
Oh, Papa's in the second room, hanging on, waiting for
popcorn, pop, pop.
Oh, and I'm in the back room, about to blow my top, but that's a
popcorn, pop, pop.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, the apologies of the week.
We're so sorry.
We don't have any news of the Olympic movement, but we have an Olympic apology or two. Olympics fans, of course, expressed their dissatisfaction over NBC's decision to show the games and tape delay. Those who subscribe to DirecTV in Los Angeles had another reason to be upset. The satellite provider went dark during last Sunday night's closing ceremony at about 9:35 p.m. and stayed off for about 30 minutes. DirecTV apologized to viewers in a statement. A technical issue at our broadcast center caused a brief disruption of the signal this evening. The signal was down for approximately a half hour. We're looking into the cause and apologize to those customers who were affected and invite you to join us for the Rio Olympics in only 4 years. The BBC was forced into an embarrassing on-air apology after referring to Olympic gold medal winning boxer Luke Campbell's mother and sister as dead, while his mother had been alive and in attendance for his moment of triumph. Presenter Gabby Logan, praising the fighter on his victory, mentioned his triumph over adversity given the loss of his mother and sister in a car crash in 2006. However, she confused his background with that of fellow British fighter Freddie Evans. Logan had to make a hasty correction before the end of her program. She said, "We're happy to tell you his mom was watching tonight." The apology continued later on Twitter with Logan writing, "Huge apologies to Luke Campbell's family. His mom is alive and well. Some erroneous information made it to air. I can only apologize." Australia's public broadcaster apologized after a radio host asked his listeners to play a word association game involving Hitler and fan-forced ovens, the kind of ovens that were used in the camps. Clyde Prestowitz has retracted and apologized for his claims that Fareed Zakaria's book, The Post-American World, did not credit him for a quote. This is after Zakaria apologized previously for a different act of apparent plagiarism. There's a mess of apologizing going on over there. The Welsh daily newspaper, The Western Mail, has apologized over what has been dubbed the worst caption of all time on Twitter at the end of a picture caption on a story about Mid Wales Airport manager Bob Jones, who died when a light aircraft he was traveling in crashed into a mountainside, was the acronym LOL, which stands for Laugh Out Loud. A spokesman for the publishers said the caption error is under internal investigation. We apologize for any offense this error may have caused. That was a failure, or as they say on Twitter, a fail. And the Anti-Defamation League has apologized for branding the band Hatebreed as among a group of hate-mongering white racist bands. They, I guess, assumed from the name. Hatebreed. No? It's not. The Apologies of the Week, ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. Ladies and gentlemen, that's going to conclude this week's edition of the show. The program returns next week at the same time over these same stations over NPR Worldwide throughout Europe, the USN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world through the facilities of the American Forces Network up and down the east coast of North America via the shortwave giant WBCQ, the planet, 7.490 megahertz shortwave, on the Mighty 104 in Berlin, around the world via the internet at two different locations, live and archived whenever you want at harryshearer.com and kcrw.com, available on the, on the Mighty 104 in Berlin. Did I say that already? Ich bin ein repetitive Berliner. Available for your smartphone through Stitcher.com and available as a free podcast for KCRW.com. And it'll be just like finding a place to put that waste if you'd agree to join with me then. Would you already? Thank you very much, A tip of the show, chapeau to the San Diego, Pittsburgh, Chicago, and Hawaii desks. Thanks as always to Pam Halstead. This broadcast is on Twitter. Join the nearly 67,000 whatevers at the Harry Shearer. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions that originates through the facilities of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as the home of the Rubber Promise and the home of the homeless.